The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Wow, is there some bruising? Let me just give you the seven, I think, most severe lines. And these are really serious findings by the judge about the DA. And these are all verbatim from the opinion. First of all, there is a, quote, significant appearance of impropriety that infects the prosecution team. Second, a tremendous lack in judgment. Third, the unprofessional manner of the DA's testimony. Fourth, the odor of mendacity remains. I Googled mendacity. It means lying. Fifth, the legally improper speech that was made in the church that Laura just talked about, legally improper with the effect to cast racial aspersions on the defendants. Sixth, the DA has created dangerous waters for the DA to wade further into. And finally, and I think this is the most damning, there are reasonable questions about whether the DA testified untruthfully. Any one of these statements by a judge would be a career ender for a normal prosecutor. To have an on-the-record finding that there are reasonable questions about whether you lied under oath, that would be devastating. And one of you has to go. Either the DA and with her the entire office, or Nathan Wade. This will be the easiest decision the DA's office has ever had to make. Obviously, Nathan Wade will go. The speech, the public speech she made in the church was, quote, legally improper. And the judge even says in the ruling, it may be time for a gag order on the DA because she keeps on making improper public statements. I think those comments were wildly inappropriate. They violate any prosecutorial ethics. If you look at the Georgia code, it says no prosecutor should ever make a public statement that might inflame or influence a potential jury pool. So, Taylor Greene, I actually think in some ways that's a cleaner case for disqualification than all this financial stuff.
This is not a spectacle to be for the TV because you lose people, you lose potential people who are going to be on that jury, and you lose trust in the public, or public loses that trust. So I completely agree. This shouldn't have happened. And
let's just say the most important case in Georgia history. I think that it's pretty safe to say. And yet the lack of judgment shown here, just absolutely stunning. How does she move forward effectively as the prosecutor of this case?
The key here is how to go forward, because clearly Wade is off. But I think that this is such a huge body blow, almost a fatal blow to Fani Willis. I think the way forward is she has to voluntarily recuse herself. I don't know that she has it in her, but I think she clearly has no credibility with this judge. If your first interest is this case, I think she needs to remove herself voluntarily and just say someone else is going to oversee this case in Georgia so that whatever happens to her in terms of ethics, it doesn't taint this case.
The Trump team and the co-defendants really succeeded here in one other key respect. She made that motion on January 8th, 2024. We are now on March 15th. It took us more than 2 months to complete all of the briefing and evidentiary hearings and closing arguments and now the decision on this. Yeah. And in the meantime, nothing else on this case moved forward.
I like how the last lady there says that this whole Fani affair, it's just been a 2 month delay, basically. I mean, we've got to get Trump. They say the silent part out loud. The whole purpose behind all of these cases is to get rid of the bad orange man. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. As you know, if you're a regular viewer, you can get to the live video stream at trumpetdaily.com and also at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. Lots and lots to get to on today's show. The new arrangement here, I'm just totally disoriented. Sam has been up to a lot of moving parts this week. He's still a little bit disgruntled over my comment that he was a little off his game at the wedding last weekend. So he's trying to throw me off. If I'm thrown off today, in case you're wondering, I'm standing in front, not in front of our beautiful brown background, but this is the big TV or monitor screen behind us, which we can sub in various backgrounds. So there you go. You see the new arrangement. Tell us, don't tell us if you don't like it. Tell Sam if you don't like it. If you'd like to submit some feedback, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. As I say, lots to get to. A couple of other bits and pieces. First, though, Richard Palmer subbed in yesterday. We appreciate him. From Ed Stone, it had been quite a while since he was able to sub in, so we appreciate him giving me a little extra time off. And then also, I might just mention, we had Ray Chen last night, the violinist, performing at Armstrong Auditorium. Just a brilliant musician. And if you'd like to add to your musical library, you might check out Ray Chen. All of these judges, McAfee, he comes down with his order today, basically saying, I think it was Revolver that said he split the baby. It's either Fannie or Wade. It can't be both. But the thing of it is, both of them lied under oath. Both of them said the same thing about their relationship. Both of them lied to that judge. And so here's the judge wanting to have it both ways. I mean, as you heard there from the cold open, CNN even admitted, this is strong language. I mean, this would ruin any other district attorney's career. But not in the case of Fannie, because going after Trump was what she campaigned on. This was supposed to be the beginning of her career ascent. So now the judge says, look, if you want to go forward with this, you've got to get rid of Wade. And that's probably what she'll do. She's probably got too much pride to just step aside, as even Andrew Weissman, the pit bull, says she should do. Their pride in so many cases leads to their downfall. But in so many ways, I mean, it is so, the lawlessness here is so egregious that even many of the talking heads in the regime media are saying, yeah, I think Fannie needs to step aside so that we can get this thing moving. I mean, we're running out of time. But that said, what a weak ruling from this judge. If they both lied under oath, get rid of both of them. Speaking of some tough talk, like there was in the brief, but not a lot of tough action, listen to this tough talk. This is from Fannie herself back in 2020, clip 7.
You say, Ms. Willis, Judge Willis, what law did he violate? A few, but let's try this on for size. As used in this code section, the term extortion means an unlawful taking by a public law officer under color of his office from any person of any money or thing of value that is not due to him or more that is due to him. Any public officer shall be by himself, his deputy, or his agent, or other in person employed by him, be guilty of extortion and receiving other and greater fees then by law are allowed him, shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, and repeat this part for me, and shall be dismissed from office. Not maybe, shall be dismissed from office.
That's Fannie in 2020 calling for the previous DA to be removed from office for doing what she's guilty of doing. And as the CNN commentators point out, that may not even be the worst of it. Lying under oath? And then going off to that church, basically, and accusing all of Trump's people publicly, accusing all of Trump's people of being racist. There's multiple reasons why she should have been removed, both of them. But there she is. There she is calling for a DA to be removed for doing exactly what she's guilty of. And speaking of the pot calling the kettle black, listen to this. This doozy from the fake vice president, clip 11.
And that is not all. If he is reelected, the former president has openly said he intends to weaponize the Department of Justice against his enemies.
Wow, can you believe that? Weaponizing the DOJ against your enemies, which is exactly what this fake administration is guilty of. The dear leader, Barack Obama, of course, behind it all. So here they are. They lied under oath. Willis now probably fires Nathan Wade and then moves on. But as Jonathan Turley pointed out on Fox, that may not be such a bad thing for the Trump team. Listen to clip 12.
The entire office out of the mix. He'd have to reassign this to another set of prosecutors. That would cause considerable delay. It could also cause the dismissal of the case if those new prosecutors looked at this racketeering theory and said, like many of us, wow, this doesn't really hold together very well. So this avoided the cliff, but it did not avoid the questions that will inevitably come up. You know, it's like, you know, finding two people in a bank vault and taking one off to jail. I mean, the question is, you know, the appearance problem that the judge identified with regard to Wade was directly related to his relationship with Willis. They both testified in the same way. They were the two parts of this this relationship. And yet only one of them was disqualified. I think that this does take an element of courage for an elected state judge, because many people in Fulton County are not going to like the fact that he just disqualified Wade and gave credence to this theory of an improper relationship, an appearance issue that does touch upon Willis and her office. That's all for the good. The problem is the disjointed aspect of the opinion itself. It doesn't really hold together that well. The big question was, what is the standard? Is it just an appearance, or do you have to show an actual conflict? He indicates that he believes it is indeed the appearance standard. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, I don't see how Willis could escape disqualification. Many people believe that both of these prosecutors lied on the stand, that there were false statements submitted to courts. The key about that is Willis and Wade are prosecuting people in this case for that very conduct. You know, in some ways, this result may actually appeal to Trump and his defendants. You know, they established that there was an improper relationship, at least for the purposes of disqualification, and they left a wounded Willis to continue on in the case. And she will stand accused of false statements as she prosecutes others for that type of conduct.
He makes a pretty good point there at the end, that if you leave a wounded Willis in, This may be another big victory for Donald Trump, because she's made a botch of it. I mean, this is the RICO case in Georgia. You heard it in the cold open. This is the most important case for the communist left, and it can't even get off the ground. The lawfare strategy collapsing before our eyes, the documents case in Florida because of the Hur report. Who would have thought that the Hur report would save Trump in that lawsuit? Down in Florida, as this judge is now, well, we can't go forward and go after Trump when they gave Biden and his people a complete pass. This was an interesting bit from NBC News as well. Donald Trump putting up the bond in the New York case so that he can get it up to the appellate level. It says here, the CEO of the Chubb Insurance Company on Wednesday defended providing former President Donald Trump with a $91 million appeal bond in the case where he was found civilly liable for defaming writer E. Jean Carroll after she accused him of rape. So many had wondered how Trump would come up with the money so that he could even get it up to appeal. And here comes this insurance company that, you know what, wants to do business with Donald Trump. You know, the one that inflated his net worth and talked about all these properties being double their worth. And of course, through it all, Trump's people said, hey, we took out loans from banks and insurance companies were involved and everybody got paid. Everybody was happy. Nobody got hurt here. And here comes an insurance company saying, I'd like to do business with Trump. They know. They know what's going on here. And more important still, the American people know. That's why the more they go after him, whether it's the documents case, the RICO case, these crazy cases in New York, the more support he enjoys. Chubb CEO Evan Greensburg, in a letter to investors, customers, and brokers who had expressed concerns about the bond, wrote that the decision to give Trump the bond has nothing to do with the underlying merits of the appeal, or with favoring any of the parties in the case. As the surety, we don't take sides, he said. But you can see all the Trump haters just up in arms. How could you do this? We had him on the ropes. says here, it would be wrong for us to do so, and we are in no way supporting the defendant. We are supporting and are part of the justice system, plumbing included in this case. The bottom line here, though, I mean, at the end of the day, businesses, insurance companies, banks, they all love doing business with Donald Trump. They love it. Listen to this CEO. This is Ken Griffin, the CEO of Citadel. I mean, he heads up one of the biggest banks in the world. Listen to what he said recently on CNBC, clip 8.
Do you think Trump's going to win?
Right here, right now? Elections tomorrow?
Yeah.
He wins it. But we'll be up late. I think for investors overall, a Trump administration's good for our capital markets. It encourages the sense that government's aligned with you and not opposed to you.
Wow. I mean, Trump coming back, it's good for capital markets. It's good for the economy. It's good for investors. It's good for the Chubb Insurance Company. Pretty amazing. The bottom line, as I say, businesses love doing business with Donald Trump. This is from Axios. Democrats' big vulnerability, why they're losing black Hispanic voters. Donald Trump's able to somehow, some way, you know, the racist, he's able to peel away these minority voters. It says new data shows the Democrats' longtime advantage with black, Latino, and Asian American voters has shrunk to its lowest point in more than 60 years, creating a massive vulnerability for President Biden and congressional Democrats. I mean, Republicans don't even need that big of a gain here to just totally devastate the communist left. Now, we know they're going to be cheating at every opportunity that they can cheat. We saw that in 2020. But it says here, one of the most loyal parts of the Democratic coalition is suddenly in danger. Black and Hispanic men could vote Republican in numbers not seen since President Dwight D. Eisenhower. The big picture here, Latinos, the nation's largest non-white group, still lean Democratic, but they've been shifting Republican over the last two decades and are no longer the slam dunk Democrats they were in 1960. This is more bad news for the Democrat party. They're taking hits from every direction, as you well know. Look at the invasion at the southern border. And the fake administration, Joe Obama, out there trying to say they're doing everything that they can. You had that report a few weeks ago about the Joe Obama government flying in immigrants from all over the world. It's not just the triangle nations there in Central America or Mexico. It's everywhere. Tens of thousands every single month. And now you've got this flotilla coming from Haiti. Haiti's being run by barbecue, remember? The gangs are running Haiti, and so people are fleeing for their lives. And Governor Ron DeSantis, I mean, he's saying all the right things, and he's evidently not going to allow it to happen, but where's Joe Obama? What will the Biden administration do? We touched on this just the other day. Listen to this story from Fox News. A Haitian migrant charged with rape of a 15-year-old girl entered via controversial parole program. It says he's now charged with rape of a 15-year-old girl at a local migrant hotel, was allowed into the U.S. by a controversial parole program that allows up to 30,000 migrants a month to fly into the country. 30,000 per month. This is coming from the air. As I said the other day, you've got the ground invasion at the southern border. You've got the air invasion that's brought on by Barack Obama's deep state, Barack Obama's government. And now they're invading by sea. The flotilla is on the way. And this guy that got in, this was on the air travel. I mean, this happened last June before Haiti just totally collapsed. Says here, local authorities in Rockland, Massachusetts arrested 26-year-old Corey Alvarez, a Haitian national. Boston News reported that he pleaded not guilty at his arraignment on Thursday for aggravated rape of a child. It says the outlet reported that police responded to a Comfort Inn, which is part of a program to house migrant families. So they fly them in from all over the world, including Haiti, even before Haiti collapsed. And then they put them up in the Comfort Inn, and then they give them the cash card, then they give them the phone, then they give them the work permit, then they tell them, yeah, you can stay here for a couple years, no problem. And then this happens. Multiple sources tell Fox News that Alvarez came to the U.S. in June via the Cuban, Haitian, Nicaraguan, and Venezuelan parole processes. All they have to do is show up and say, hey, I'm running for my life. It's so dangerous back home. And the U.S. accepts them from Cuba, from Haiti, from Nicaragua, from Venezuela. And of course, there's many more nations represented when you look at the ones just flooding into the country at the southern border. The policy was first announced for Venezuelans in October 2022. You see, that's under Barack Obama's watch. 2022. And remember, for 2021, 22, and 23, the Joe Obama reps, they were out there saying, there's no problem at the border. There's no problem with illegal immigration. In fact, we don't use the word illegal. They're just undocumented. We'll get them documented as soon as possible. Everything's secure. Started with Venezuelans. And then it says here, in January 2023, this is just a year ago, the administration announced that the program was expanding. They were expanding the program. Now it's been as many as, what, 340 or 50,000 immigrants that we, the United States, America, is flying into Boston, Massachusetts, and other cities such as that. And then the city at the local level, they put them up at the Comfort Inn. This is unbelievable. Who does this to themselves? Who does this to their own nation, their own people, their own cities? Eric Adams in New York City is saying, look, we're losing New York. Democrats are even sounding the alarm. Democrats are even saying Fannie needs to go. It says here they expanded it in January of 2023. Nicaraguans, Cubans, Haitians. The program would allow up to 30,000 people per month into the U.S. Another 30,000. Leave aside what's happening at the southern border. Leave aside the flotilla that's coming even now from Haiti. Here you have Joe Bama flying in an additional 30,000 per month. Fox News is told that Alvarez flew directly from Haiti to JFK Airport in New York City and was sponsored by someone in New Jersey. They just lay out the red carpet for them. Yeah, get a sponsor in New Jersey, send them up to a sanctuary city near Boston, put them up in the Comfort Inn, make sure they have three squares a day, give them a cash card, and then if a few of them rape teenage girls, you know, we'll deal with it, I guess. Given what's going on in Haiti right now, it's not like it was a picture of stability 7, 8, 9 months ago. How do you screen these people? How do you know? That's what Joe Obama's people have said. Listen, this is a very secure program, what we've got here. I mean, everybody is thoroughly vetted. Not Alvarez. No, he went up to Comfort Inn outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and he raped a little girl. How many girls did he rape in Haiti? No one knows. Just invite him in. Invite him in from everywhere. They're under duress. They're fleeing persecution. It says, meanwhile, there are concerns about a potential migrant wave coming from Haiti as violence escalates in the Caribbean country. Florida this week sent troops and aircraft to the coast in order to prevent illegal immigrants landing in boats. The boats are coming. Ron DeSantis is evidently putting his foot down. But here again, the lack of action coming from Joe Bama tells you everything that you need to know. The invasion is intentional. the invasion is intentional. Listen to Dana Perino on Fox News, clip 9.
I think this is an emergency that DeSantis is on top of because he has to be, but the Biden administration has a border czar. Where's she?
Yep.
Right? And I thought she was a foreign policy expert. I don't know where all of this could have possibly gone wrong. And desperate people will leave. And believe me, these people are desperate. And if they were to get to the southern border, they wouldn't walk across with a neck pillow and an iPhone and a new Louis Vuitton suitcase. Mm-hmm. They have nothing to eat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a terrible situation.
It's a terrible situation that's only made worse by the collapse of Haiti's government, the president fleeing the scene, the gang led by Barbecue, because he likes to barbecue his victims, and some of his followers enjoy cannibalism. That's in Haiti. What did we say 10 years ago? No, 14 years ago. It was back in 2010. We said this was going to be a nightmare for America to get in there and try to solve all the problems of Haiti. How long would it be before this turned out to be a curse for America? Well, here we are. Here we are in 2014. The world around us is breaking down. And everyone's invited to America. You talk about a collapse of law and order. This was covered in this morning's morning brief. Richard Palmer's morning brief, Toronto authorities basically telling residents there, you know what, if you want to avoid being attacked, just let the attacker steal your car. And then there's no problem, right? Clip 10.
There's also updated advice for all vehicle owners, a message echoed by Toronto police speaking at an Etobicoke safety meeting last month. Constable Marco Ricciardi had a new message for vehicle owners who keep their fobs in Faraday pouches.
To prevent the possibility of being attacked in your home, leave your fobs at your front door. Because they're breaking into your home to steal your car. They don't want anything else. A lot of them that they're arresting have guns on them, and they're not toy guns, they're real guns. They're loaded.
Oh, the criminals in Toronto have the guns, and they're loaded. Okay. How about the residents? No Second Amendment up there for the people of Canada. And so, I mean, it would be one thing for someone like AOC to say, well, just put your fob by the front door so that they can break in the door and get the fob and take your car and you won't get hurt. But this is law enforcement saying this. These are police officers. This is our best defense now. Just let the criminals have their way. Let them have whatever they want. Give them space to destroy. The infamous words of that mayor, I think, in Baltimore years ago, Freddie Gray. Just stand back. Let them have, except on January 6th. I mean, then crack down, shoot flashbangs at them. Arrest them. Put 2,000 of them in jail. Everywhere else, a complete and total breakdown of law enforcement. And then you look at the conflicts between nations, like in Israel, Ukraine, wherever. Melanie Phillips, by the way, she had a piece this morning, The West's Abandonment of the Jews. Yeah, just let them fend for themselves. In fact, if you're the leading Democrat in the Senate, call for Bibi Netanyahu to step down. Call for new elections in Israel. Here, we can't even get our own affairs straight in the United States. And you've got a sitting senator in Washington, D.C., meddling in the election of Israel or calling for one. This is exactly what the Dear Leader used to do. I mean, they know how to meddle in elections abroad. They certainly know how to do it at home as well. They're quite good at that. Don't like the leader, but just shove him aside. And then say, it's for democracy. You see, we got to save democracy. Really was a shameful speech that Schumer gave. I think it was just yesterday. Listen to clip 1.
I also believe Prime Minister Netanyahu has lost his way by allowing his political survival to take the precedence over the best interests of Israel. He has put himself in coalition with far-right extremists like Minister Smotrich and Ben-Gavir, and as a result, he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah.
What a disgrace. Israel's becoming the pariah. Never mind Hamas. It's Bibi that's lost his way. Not the mullahs. Not Hamas. I mean, you can't even say they lost their way. They have been committed from day one. Kill the Jews. Murder Jews. It's in the Hamas charter. But here is Chuck Schumer giving a disgraceful speech yesterday. Abandoning the Jews. Shoving aside Benjamin Netanyahu. Can't go into Rafah, says Joe Obama. Bibi, of course, he's showing a bit of backbone. He happens to be a fairly strong Western leader. We're going into Rafah anyway. We'd love to have America's support. Listen to more from Senator Schumer, clip two.
The Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past.
The world has changed radically since October 7th. Yeah, and who's behind some of these radical changes? Well, for one, you've got the attack on October 7th, and, you know, the U.S. paid a little lip service in support of Israel for, what was it, 24 hours, maybe 48? And now look where we are. Bibi's the problem. Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's the one that we've got to shove aside. He's the leadership we've got to remove. Listen again to Schumer, clip three.
I think the same is true for the Israeli people. Call me an optimist, but I believe that if the Israeli public is presented with a path to a two-state solution that offers a chance at lasting peace and coexistence, then most mainstream Israelis will moderate their views and support it.
Most mainstream Israelis will moderate their views. If we impose our will on Israel, look, the mainstream will come around to be more left-wing, like Haaretz. So we just got to get rid of Bibi. He's too conservative. You see that same thinking over here, don't you? Look at this resignation of Ken Buck. I mentioned that yesterday. You've got reports now suggesting that there may be more rhinos that are prepared to resign early to hand over the leadership to Hakeem Jeffries and to give the Democrats a majority in these last few months before the election. They hate Donald Trump so much that they're willing to step aside early if it might, what, say, prevent Trump from being certified? Put an end to these Republican investigations into the Biden crime family, investigations that turn up a lot of strong language, just like McAfee's report. But there's never any action, is there? Never any action taken. Just some strongly worded documents, some strongly worded letters or briefs. The anti-law spirit, the anti-American spirit in this world is so strong. And as I say, the world is just in so much turmoil everywhere that you look. Let me just play. I think I have time for one more from Schumer yesterday. Clip four.
Israel is a democracy. 5 months into this conflict, it is clear that Israelis need to take stock of the situation and ask, must we change course? At this critical juncture, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel. At a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government. I also believe a majority of the Israeli public will recognize the need for change. And I believe that holding a new election, once the war starts to wind down, would give Israelis an opportunity to express their vision for the post-war future.
as I said, what a disgrace. And then, too, the arrogance. He knows. He speaks for Israel. He speaks for the Israeli people. Look, all they need is new leadership. And then they'll come around to think about, they'll come around to think about the world the way that we left-wing Democrats in the swamp think about the world. It really is a shame to see that kind of audacious election meddling coming from Washington, D.C. And no one bats an eye. No one says a thing. There's a few commentators, I suppose. But what a shame, as I say. What is happening in the United States? What is happening around the world? It's 2 Timothy 3:1. In the last days, perilous times shall come. It is a significantly more radicalized world since October 7. But why? Well, a lot of it's being spearheaded by these radical communists. But they're not alone. They're not alone. We all have a bit of blame to put upon our own shoulders, given what God says in Isaiah 1 and other prophecies, just about the sickness that sets in. What happens when you get to a point where there's just universal sin, like there was before the flood of Noah's day or during the days of Sodom and Gomorrah? These are sobering times. And God wants for us to wake up one last bit. I think this might have also been in the brief this morning. But the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, they've revamped their mission statement. It used to say that it aimed to ensure each graduate was, quote, committed to the values of duty, honor, country. And now it just says committed to Army values. Isn't that so much better? I'm sure that's how Mark Milley, the outgoing general that's now becoming a millionaire because he's on the election circuit, he was woke. I mean, now it's just the values of the Army. Never mind duty, never mind honor, and never mind country. Is that the mission statement of a strong and healthy nation? I don't think so. Where is it leading? Well, the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, if I could just plug this before our break. If you don't have this all-important text regarding Bible prophecy, I mean, a third of the Bible is prophecy, and this will really open your eyes to understand that most often overlooked third of the Holy Bible. Just call our operators today and request the United States and Britain in Prophecy, the 800 number, it's 1-866-930-3024. When we come back, we've got this week's installment of World Watch. You can look forward to that and a short Bible study to conclude today's show with. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
Daily News, Bible Prophecy. See the connection on The Trumpet Daily. Are you feeling overwhelmed by the flood of news and information? You need something to sift the news and bring you only what matters most. You need The Trumpet Daily. You also need something to help you understand not just what's happening now, but what will happen next. You need The Trumpet Daily. Only The Trumpet Daily accurately matches daily news to precise Bible prophecies. Because Bible prophecy is the only tool up to the task of sifting the news down to what's important and showing you what will happen next. Join host Stephen Fleury every weekday. Go to trumpetdaily.com.
Nations in the BRICS alliance are working to create a digital payment system based on blockchain, Russian presidential aide Yuri Ushakov said on March 5th. The BRICS alliance includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, plus new members Egypt, Ethiopia, Iran, and the United Arab Emirates. Ushakov explained that the goal is to improve the BRICS nations' role in the international financial system while reducing the bloc's reliance on the United States dollar. The BRICS countries make up 45% of the global population and 36% of the global gross domestic product. Their plan to develop an alternative payment system is part of a larger effort to ditch the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency and challenge U.S. financial dominance. To learn why the trumpet closely watches trade alliances like BRICS and international attempts to move away from the U.S. dollar, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches the Development of a Massive Anti-American Trade Bloc. Authorities in Europe are facing a growing number of terror threats linked to the Israel-Hamas war, the Wall Street Journal reported on March 12. On Monday, Italian authorities detained three Palestinians suspected of being members of the terrorist group Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. In December, Austrian and Bosnian police arrested two groups of Afghan and Syrian refugees who carried Kalashnikov assault rifles and pistols. Pictures of Jewish and Israeli targets in Europe were found on the suspects' mobile phones. In December, German and Dutch investigators arrested four people who allegedly received an order from Hamas to open a secret stockpile of weapons to attack Jewish institutions in Berlin and elsewhere in Western Europe. These incidents suggest Europe's terror threat is coming from new sources, the report says, referring to Iran and its terrorist proxies in the Middle East, such as Hezbollah and Hamas. The trumpet has warned since the 1990s that Iran and the radical Islamist groups it controls would clash with Europe. This forecast is based on the sure word of Bible prophecy. To learn more, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Iran and Europe Heading for a Clash of Civilizations. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi said on March 7th that the United States is devising various tactics to suppress China, calling out U.S. sanctions against China as absurd. As China grows increasingly hostile toward the U.S., it is working more closely with Russia. Wang praised the strategic guidance of Chinese General Secretary Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin that resulted in the two countries reaching a record high trade of $240 billion in 2023. China's exports to Russia were up 54% in 2023 compared to the year before. Its imports of Russian oil also soared after Russia was sanctioned by the U.S. and the West for invading Ukraine. China now buys 45 to 50% of Russia's oil exports. The Trumpet and our forerunner magazine, The Plain Truth, have watched the trends of Russia and China allying for more than six decades. Bible prophecy says that these two, along with other Asian nations, will build the largest Asian military alliance the world has ever seen. To learn more about this important subject, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches Russia Allying with China. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.
There you go, this week's World Watch, as was mentioned there at the very end. Just go to thetrumpet.com and you can order all the literature that we show you on this program. There's the 800 number, as I said before the break. But, of course, you can get to it quickly, even the PDFs at thetrumpet.com. So just visit our website. And as you know, everything we offer to you is offered without cost or obligation. When you think of the book of Daniel, it's easy to dwell on the many spectacular prophecies contained therein. You've got the Daniel 2 image. You've got the beasts of Daniel 7. We refer often to the three Antiochuses in Daniel chapter 8 and also referred to in the 11th chapter. The King of the South comes to mind, the clash between the King of the South and the King of the North. That's in Daniel 11 as well. The book talks about the two abominations. The 1150 days prophecy, that's in Daniel 8. So a lot of just earth-shaking prophecies for sure in the book of Daniel. But the book of Daniel also has a lot of detail, a lot of detail about individual lives, the personal and living faith of Daniel and his three remarkable friends. It has a lot to say about their royal education, their godly character, their outstanding leadership. These were leaders, and they were young men when they were getting their training in Babylon. And of course, there's pretty dramatic examples in the book of Daniel attesting to their remarkable courage and their close and intimate relationship with God the Father And two, their ability, with God's help and power, of course, to maintain such a positive mindset and approach to such fiery trials. I mean, you think about Daniel in the lion's den or Daniel's three friends in the furnace. Those are in the furnace. I mean, that's literally a fiery trial. And later on in the Bible, it speaks of fiery trials. So Peter and others that talked about that, I mean, I'm sure they were well-versed in some of this history in the book of Daniel. Daniel means God is judge. God is judge. My father wrote a little booklet. It's in Daniel Unlocks Revelation. And chapter 2 there is God is my judge. I'd encourage you to review that chapter. If you're looking to get an increase in faith, in just putting your trust in God, faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God, Paul said. This is a quote from that particular chapter, Daniel Unlocks Revelation. It says, the Laodiceans rejected God as their judge. Then they failed to endure their trials. I believe this is the best book in the Bible on how to handle your trials, even better than Job. The best book in the Bible, he's referring to Daniel, and how it's even more effective or helpful than the book of Job. Job went through some sore, fiery trials as well. But this one really shows us, the book of Daniel really shows us how to look to God as our judge, to put our faith in God. He is judge, after all. It says here, these men experienced some horrific trials, and God delivered them every time. God judged them as resounding successes. All of us are being graded, much like college students. We must pass our tests without cheating, and if we can look to the Most High God, who is beyond perfection, if we look to the Most High God, if we look to God as our judge, we can pass the test. We can pass the exam without cutting corners or cheating. It says, if you're facing a fiery furnace or you're going to put your life in God's hands some other way, you need to know that this God who is above perfection is your judge. You can study through these examples in Daniel. Not that there's anything wrong with the spectacular prophecies. We study those often as well. We refer to those often. But you can look at these more personal examples and see very clearly that it's God who rules, even in the midst of Gentile kingdoms. God carries out his purpose. Now, as Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages and IHP, he has taken a hands-off policy in so many ways since man was cut off from the tree of life there at the end of Genesis 3. But at the same time, his purpose and plan, it continues. It stands. He is preparing a family government to rule this world. And so he has called out people in advance to be trained in that God family government, to learn how to rule with Jesus Christ. The other thing that the book of Daniel clearly shows is that the book of the Bible as a whole is primarily the book about Israel, whether physical or spiritual Israel. And in Daniel, you've got all these Gentile kingdoms that are referred to, these Gentile leaders, and yet look at what God was doing through these four little Jewish lads. Look at the leadership training that they received, even while going through some fiery trials. It's not because God favors a certain person or people over others, but there is a time order to God's plan. Paul writes about that in the book of 1 Corinthians 15. God and the first fruits, Jesus, of course, the first of the first fruits, and then the rest that come into God's family during the millennium and beyond. It says here in the booklet, Daniel Unsealed at Last, Satan is raging. That's actually another one. We've got the Daniel Unlocks Revelation booklet and then Daniel Unsealed at Last, two booklets on this book of the Bible. If you'd like to order or request either of those, again, the website or the 800 number, But it says Satan is raging mad right now. He has been cast down to this earth and his sight is fixed on you, your faith. How will you respond to his attack? It says our job right now is to build faith so that when the time comes, we will listen to our Father and act. God really does want for us in the midst of some fiery trials, some severe testing, examination going on. He wants us to really build faith so that when the time comes, we'll just look to God as our judge. Just like those three that were cast into the furnace. They said, you know what? God can save us. And even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to some pagan idol. I mean, that's faith. That's just putting yourself in God's hands and letting God have his way. Letting God deliver you. Notice Daniel chapter 9 and verse 1. We get a little bit of insight into just how educated these servants of God were in God's truth, the Holy Bible. Daniel 9 and verse 1, it says, in the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes, it says, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans. It says, in the first year of Darius, I, Daniel, verse 2 says, I understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of the Eternal came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. Daniel came to this understanding or awareness by studying the books of the Bible, in this case, the book of Jeremiah. And he knew that the Jews were to return and that they were to build the second temple. Daniel understood by books, my father wrote. He studied hard and was brilliant because of it. God wants us to bear down like Daniel and understand what these prophecies are all about. We do have to study to show ourselves approved unto God. 2 Timothy 2:15. All scripture, it says in 2 Timothy 3, is given by inspiration from God. So that's important truth, to understate it slightly. It's important. It's life-changing. It's timeless. God's truth, God's instruction, it's never outdated. We need it now. We need it more today than we ever have before. My father says that means putting in diligent, earnest study. God is making us study hard to really get it. I mean, this church does put out a lot of content, and even being right here at headquarters, it is hard to keep up with it. All of the magazines, the expanded issue of Let the Stone Speak, that also serves as a brochure for the exhibit, The Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered. There's a lot to keep up with and study, but just, like Churchill said, bite off more than you can chew and just chew like crazy. You know, show some diligence, as my father says there in that quote. Daniel understood by books. Obviously, God's inspiration was involved there as well. God gave him direction in his study, and he'll do the same for us. But we've got to show ourselves to be diligent. Read Zechariah 6 and verse 15 sometime and see how important diligence is. I mean, I could give a separate study on that. I've got more notes here on Daniel chapter 1. And we'll see next time just how diligent Daniel and his friends were with respect to their royal education. That's what they were receiving, even as young Jewish lads. They took their education seriously. They really did pour their hearts into their study, their books, with some diligence, with some drive. There's so many distractions today. I mean, we really do have to switch things off, the distractions, that is, and focus and concentrate on the spiritual task at hand. I'll get into more, particularly from Daniel 1, next week. But right now, we're out of time. That's all we have time for on today's show. You are listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We appreciate you joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.